Alberta Beef Producers is looking for the next provincial representative to the Canadian Cattle Youth Council. Apply today for the chance to represent Alberta cattle producers on a national and international level. Improve your resume with learning opportunities like board governance and media training. Expand your network in the industry and learn about the many ways you can get involved now and in the future. Nominees must be between the ages of 18 and 40 and an eligible cattle producer in Alberta. Applications close May 17th, 2024. You can learn more by going to abpdaily.com. And here's another Canadian Beef Industry Conference special featuring Dr. Bart Lardner on drought.
Deborah Murphy here. I'm at Canadian Beef Industry Conference, joined by Dr. Bart Lardner. And today you're talking about drought. We've come through the drought, I'd say most of us. Is there things that we can learn in preparing for the next one? Because there's always the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said today, drought's just around the corner. And so prudent planning, you know, the wise producers have planned. They have that year of feed in the back dry lot. They have that year of grazing somewhere in the back 40. But sometimes when you're going into year three of drought, you have to make some drastic changes. We have to react. We have to react positively. You know, there's some things we might have to do. Obviously, we're trying to find grazing. We're trying to find fiber. You know, it's not unusual to see cows changing postal codes. It's not unusual to maybe think about reducing stocking rates. It's not unusual to think about maybe depopulating a little bit. Maybe supplementing your bull battery out there during the breeding season. Maybe not retaining 20% of your heifers, maybe going down to 5%. Maybe just getting rid of that grasser program. So there's options out there.
When's the best time to plan for this?
The best time to plan, and I always tell this when I'm teaching range management, is in the fall. You've just come through that season, and yes, so that particular perennial resource or that annual resource worked well or didn't work well, so now we're planning for next year country, right? So we're just coming, this is August, we should have just experienced that grazing program in 2022, and now we're planning for 2023. With our fingers crossed that we're going to get adequate moisture. I talked about looking at long-term averages, and we've typically looked at 30-year long-term averages, but I think today we have to look at 10-year long-term averages, because our climate patterns are changing, and be ready for maybe, a 30% reduction in annual precipitation. What are some of those maybe warm season annual forages we can look at to stretch that perennial resource?
So can you walk us through it? It's the fall, we've come through whatever summer we've come through, and we're sitting down with a piece of paper and our laptop. What are the key areas that we need to think about when we're planning for next year?
The key thing is all about balancing demand with supply, okay? Your demand is your herd. Your demand is all the cows, heifers, calves, bulls in your herd. The supply is what do you have for resources. Did those two balance, or were they stretched? Okay, and so if we couldn't get through 2022 with that demand, we had to go out and maybe buy in additional feed, maybe had to bring in a supplementation program. That tells you you don't have enough land base. That tells you maybe you need to talk to your neighbor. Is he a cropping producer? Maybe there's some salvage crops out there. That tells us that maybe that range, that perennial range, and maybe that perennial tame seed to forage is not enough to stretch out the demand. Maybe we're going to look at some annual forage options.
What if it's been a perfect year? We have perfect resources. We're going into the spring. When do we start to worry about the next year? So is there a critical rain date that we can put our pin on for Alberta, Saskatchewan?
Yeah, I always get excited if you're an April calving herd. I'm looking at that April, May time period. We always thought that those rains would come in that May, June-ish, and our hot months would be July and August. What we've seen now with these atypical weather patterns is that we will get nothing in the spring, but we'll get that rain maybe July, August. So it's just unusual. I think that, in that May time period, we're not getting that normal precip event, and we're getting in that first 2 weeks of June. look out below. So I'm starting to think about maybe acquiring a straw-based diet. I'm probably going to start thinking about, can I get out there and secure some pellets to stretch those pasture resources, or maybe that supplementation program. Maybe I'm thinking about, well, you know what? Maybe I need to do a harder cull on my opens or maybe my older cows.
Does doing some of this planning ahead help with those hard decisions like destocking?
Well, absolutely. But, you know, the hard part is when you start to destock, it's so hard to get back up to that number. And we're all proud of where we're at in our on our operation. It's taken us 50 years to get that number or to be, a person that's just putting out terminal calves, or maybe we're growing replacement heifers. And then all of a sudden you have to think about selling off livestock. That's devastating, especially because that's your cash resource. And so, yeah. You know, instead of maybe calling a big number, maybe we'll call half that and try and live with the consequences.
Is there anything that we can do for each other in those moments? I mean, you know, your neighbors deciding they need to destock, that's not easy.
No, you know, and what I see is there needs to be more synergy between the cropping and the livestock sector. And, you know, many times, that fellow over the fence or the neighbor, maybe he has some salvage areas. Maybe he has some potential pasture grazing. We've seen that partnership happen big time in 2021 in Saskatchewan, where, you know, those crops didn't go to grain, but they were willing to allow the neighbor's animals to come on and utilize that salvage crop. So, you know, I think the community environment needs to just get together more, and we can help get through this thing together.
How can we do a better job of that? Lots of those fields aren't fenced, or water resources are limited, and also just figuring those contracts out is challenging.
It is challenging, and I think it's commitment, Debbie. It's a commitment on both parties. And is there a potential? For example, there's a quarter section of salvage crop. Can I get out there with portable electric fence, right? That's going to control my animal access. Is there ability to introduce some type of a water point? Maybe there's a dugout, or maybe there's where I can do some off-site pumping. Or, you know, the last hardest decision is to haul water. We don't want to do that. So, but you know what? It was amazing to see the relationships that happened last year. And we had guys that were phoning me, and say, oh, hey, you know what? I was able to secure some straw. Maybe it was some old three-year-old hay that was in another farmer's field. And then so from there, I did a feed test. And from there, I looked at adequate energy and protein.
Are people talking about how this worked positively, or is it just a one-time thing because of the drought?
Well, I think it's built a lot of partnerships going forward. Also, I mentioned today in my talk, and I'll mention again, is that what it showed a lot of producers is that their feeding program, they were probably killing their cows with kindness. They were probably overfeeding a lot of nutrients, maybe energy or protein, which is very costly. And they realized they could probably get that cow herd through on a real fiber-based diet with adequate energy and protein, but maybe not oversupplying it and still keeping that cow condition and still getting them through that calving event.
And does it really impact them negatively when you have are we seeing way too much levels of energy?
Sometimes we don't understand that we're overfeeding, and hence you have to go out and start to balance diets, right? Working with a nutritionist or understanding that protein is very expensive to overfeed. Energy's coming in for that energy needed in that cold stress during the winter. But, you know, in my opinion, a commercial cow does not need straight 100% alfalfa hay. In my opinion, we can get by with a mixed hay, we can get by with a green feed, we can get by with probably bringing in straw into that diet, 40% or something like that. And we've seen a lot of cows overwintered on kochia hay last year, which is unusual. And save the good stuff just coming into calving.
Well, I noticed somebody in the presentation today asked about canola.
They did, and you know, and again, I mean, there's a lot of canola being grown in the whole country is yellow, and when we get a drought-stressed crop, it's not going to go to pod, and canola is pretty high quality, very good protein, very good energy, but the issue is that it does accumulate nitrates, and so that can be an anti-quality factor for nitrate toxicity, and it also will ensile quite nicely too if you want to put it up the silage. So yeah, it's unusual to use canola as a fiber source, but if it doesn't make grain, it's going to go to a salvage crop.
There's so many pieces of the puzzle when it comes to planning. When we sit down to plan, you're talking about nutrients and things that are way beyond me and probably a lot of farmers and ranchers. Should we be bringing in a nutritionist when we start planning?
Absolutely. And I always tell producers, like, and that was my first opening slide, is when you're going to do your planning, reach out, do your research, and then look out. Can I get some human input? Can I get some literature? Can I get some websites? I put up some websites at the back end of my talk today. You know, good links, like BCRC has some good stuff. University of Saskatchewan, provincial websites have some good stuff. Western Beef has some good stuff. So, you know, do your homework. And so, okay, I live in the Southwest or I live in the boreal forest, but I'm going to experience drought. You know, what do I need going forward in case I do get into a situation where I'm getting half the rainfall I'd normally expect?
It's a big conversation to have, and I think it's important. It's a team effort.
I guess let's
hope for the best, but prepare for a drought.
It's a team. You hit the nail on the head, and it's going to impact your family. It's going to impact your future. You know, you built that operation up over decades, and then along come 1 year drought. Yeah, we can manage if we plan prudently. 2 years, probably. I've got producers in the southwest part of Saskatchewan. They're going into year three of drought. Not only a lack of rainfall, but now the grasshoppers are there. So, you know, it's a double whammy. And it's amazing, though, how they can be prudent and come up with the resourceful effort to try and just get through that situation at a stressful moment in time.
And you'll probably never look back and say, gee, I wish I wouldn't have spent those few hours in the fall planning.
Well, never,
you
never,
get
never,
moisture
never,
and it's,
you know,
not upsetting.
What was very upsetting or concerning for me was the phone calls I was getting in the middle of July in a very dry month. And folks were really struggling to find adequate hay or fiber source. And, you know, it's amazing how things will change from week to week. So when you're midsummer in the middle of a drought, probably you need to be making some serious decisions.
Well, we'll keep up checking out BCRC and doing our planning every fall. Dr. Bart Lardner, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.